Let us turn now for a little to the Word of God, to the portion read, in particular Genesis chapter 22. Genesis chapter 22, and we may read the first verse. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of. This chapter contains the narrative of the testing of Abraham, and even the children are normally quite acquainted with the story of Abraham offering up Isaac to God on Mount Moriah. But however familiar we might be with any portion of God's word, there are always matters worth considering afresh, and that is what we trust would be the case here. Now it is interesting how the chapter begins, and it came to pass after these things. There were things that had previously happened in the experience of Abraham, and no doubt Abraham was prospering at this point. His household was full of joy and gladness because of the son that God had given Abraham and Sarah, namely Isaac. His name, of course, means laughter. And undoubtedly, Isaac brought a lot of joy and a lot of laughter into the life of Abraham and Sarah, but Abraham here in particular, in his old age. And after God has given them this son, and after God has instructed Abraham that he was to send Hagar and Ishmael away, and that God intended to establish his covenant and to maintain it and expand it through Isaac, Abraham is here now being tested. God is proving the word tempt is not to be thought of as God tempting Abraham to do something in which he might actually commit sin. That's what the devil does. But God is testing or proving Abraham. But after these things, and that takes us back, what was God doing previously? What was the relationship between Abraham and God? We know from the very beginning we've been considering Abraham as the friend of God. And God had said much earlier to Abraham, Fear not, Abraham, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. And God was informing Abraham that he would never fail him, he would never leave him, he would be to him all that he needed. No matter what the circumstances, Abraham could ever understand this. What God has said, he's promised me he'll be my shield and he will be my exceeding great reward. Now in chapter 21, at the latter part of the chapter, you have this incident recorded between Abimelech and Abraham. You remember how Abimelech had to rebuke Abraham because of the what he considered to be very unworthy actions on the part, a deceit almost, of this man Abraham. God told Abimelech, nevertheless, he is a prophet. And Abimelech recognized that. And here in the chapter 21, verse 22, we read, that it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the chief captain of his host, spake unto Abram, saying, God is with you in all that thou doest. Now, it is very obvious from the past record that they could not have imagined Abraham to be perfect in any way. Abimelech could recall that he had even had to speak in rebuking terms to Abraham and Sarah, but this is what he recognizes. We can see Abraham. The evidence is clear. God is with you. And because God was with Abraham, they expected him to continue to prosper. And they wanted to make an alliance with him. This is the first record we have in Scripture of such relationship being formed between two parties like this. Abimelech wanted it to continue into the future generations, that he seemed to believe God is blessing Abraham, and that blessing is going to continue even when Abraham's gone. God is going to continue the blessing in his seed and in his offspring. And then he was concerned about his own offspring, and he wanted this healthy relationship to exist even in future generations. So there is this agreement, this alliance is formed between these two households, and that was because Abimelech could see God is with Abraham, and if God is with him, then I want to be his friend and I want to be in friendly terms with him. Now, without going into the giving of gifts and so on to seal the alliance, what I wanted to note was that in verse 32, what they did summed up, thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. And Abimelech rose up, and Phicol, the chief captain of the host, and they returned into the land of the Philistines. They were happy and confident. This is a good alliance. This is good for the future, and so on. Verse 33. And Abraham planted a grove in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. This is the first time that Abraham calls on God in this manner. The everlasting God. The God who would not change. The God who would be the same yesterday, today, and forever. The everlasting, immutable God. Now that's the one that Abraham calls on. Now that God, whom Abraham now recognizes as the everlasting God, comes to deal with Abraham by way of testing him and proving him. And what a severe test it truly is. There is no other scene in history that surpasses the scene here. Abraham, the friend of God, taking his own son, his beloved son, taking him to Mount Moriah to offer him up to God as a burnt offering or a sacrifice. The only scene that surpasses that is what Paul talks about when he writes to the Romans. God gave him up for us. God giving up his own son. A greater offering than Abraham could possibly do. But we must understand, this was a really severe test of Abraham. And we see that because he passes this test, then the promised blessings are going to come to him. Now, over all the elements of the testing, God was, as it were, bringing to the attention of Abraham himself certain things about himself. Abraham would discover things. God knew everything, and yet he was testing Abraham here, that Abraham might discover how much the grace of God actually influenced his person and his life. And the reality is, God was testing the spiritual mindedness of Abraham. Now we go back to the parting of the ways between Lot and Abraham. Lot was went from being a tent dweller to dwelling near the cities of destruction, and eventually ends up in them, but he saw the well-watered plain. And that's where he decided he was going. Material things were uppermost in the mind of Lot. It was this world, what it had to offer to Lot, that really mattered. Whereas Abraham, he was quite content to carry on as a tent dweller, looking for a city that hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Now you might think, well, God was very well acquainted with Abraham. And Abraham, with all his failings, has indeed testified by his good deeds and by his trust in God, he has proven himself to be a man of faith. But however much faith the child of God has, whether it's weak or strong, God will test it. That's one thing we must never lose sight of. If you and I profess to be the children of God, and if we have true grace in our souls, and if we are living by faith and not by sight, we must understand God will inevitably try that faith. There's no escaping from it. God will try that faith. That's what Peter learned. The trial of your faith is precious. And you see, as you will find in the experience, the conversation of many advanced saints of God, mature and experienced, that very often when they're in advanced years, they experience severe trials of their faith. And I believe that in part the reason is because they face temptations that even become stronger. Devil seeking as they advance nearer to the end of the earthly journey and toward eternity. The devil wants to rob them of every bit of comfort in their souls, and so he will tempt them to believe either that their faith will fail them or they don't have faith at all. And here is Abraham, well advanced in years. No one would doubt for a moment that Abraham was a man of faith. No one who knew him would question it. They would know perfectly well. Abraham is a man of faith. And yet here, God comes to test him. And that's the first thing we may note. He tested his faith. What did God say to him? Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac. Now isn't that quite remarkable? That's how God spoke to him. Take now thy son, thine only son. Well, what about Ishmael? Ishmael, as we've seen in the past, is as much a son of Abraham's as Isaac is. According to the flesh, he is a son. But God didn't say, he didn't come with this temptation at a time when Abraham had these two sons still dwelling in his tent. And if God had come and said, well, now, Abraham, I want you to give me one of your sons, probably Abraham wouldn't have found it so painful, though painful it would have been, undoubtedly, but it wouldn't have been such a trial because he could say, well, I'm prepared to give Ishmael, but I'll save Isaac, because Isaac is the one that I expect God to keep his covenant through and to continue the covenant line through Isaac. But God waits. It came to pass after these things. God waits until Abraham is in the circumstances that he's in. God waits till he has Abraham where he wants him, how he wants him, his circumstances to be right for the testing. Came to pass after these things. Take now thy son, thine only son, because now Ishmael has been cast out. And now God says to Abraham, take now thy son, thine only son. You see how God viewed it? Thine only son, because he knew the heart of Abraham. And he knew the attachment that Abraham had had to Isaac, but how much more, or to Ishmael, but how much more now to Isaac? Thine only son. You are so devoted to him. You look on him as your heir. You have so much confidence in him for the future. Now, Abraham, this is what I want you to do. Take thy son, thine only son, Isaac, whom thou lovest. God could have left that out. He could have said, Abraham, I want you to offer up your son. In fact, I want you to offer up your only son. When you offer him up, there's no replacement. When you offer him up, it would seem there's no one else that can possibly replace him. But I want you to offer him up. But he said, whom thou lovest. I know, Abraham, how much Isaac means to you. I know what he means to you. I know you really love that lad. Now, Isaac, how much do you love me, or Abraham, how much do you love me? Where is your heart? That's really what God was saying. Abraham, I want you to give me the evidence that I have your heart, that your affections are not drifting away from me. What did God say? I am thy shield and thine exceeding great reward. He didn't say Isaac is thine exceeding great reward. And in a sense, surely he had to be seen that way. God had rewarded the faith and the patience and the waiting of Abraham, and he gave him Isaac in his old age. And Abraham could have said to Sarah, well, wasn't it worth waiting? We thought it would never happen. It seemed impossible. But God has given us Isaac. What a reward. How kind, how good. And maybe you see when God says, thy son whom thou lovest. God may be detected in Abraham that he was beginning to love Isaac maybe too much. And maybe he was more centered upon Isaac than upon God. We do not know, but God knew. Abraham, you love Isaac. Do you love him so much that you wouldn't part with him? Or do you love me enough that you will give him up to me? God knew the heart of Abraham, that he truly did love Isaac, and therefore he was going to test him, as it were, in a sense, where it would hurt most, where it would be most painful. If God had said, Abraham, I want you to offer me up something that doesn't cost much, won't require any self-denial, won't require any real sacrifice on your part, Abraham would have been ready to do it. If God didn't say, and it's actually the same expression that's used here as in the book of Exodus when God told Moses that he was to bring the children of Israel and they were to take a lamb out of the flock for the Passover, the blood to be sprinkled and so on. Take a lamb out of the flock. And that's the same that God has said, I want you to take out of your home, out of your domestic circle, out of your life, the thing that is just so precious to you. Are you prepared, Abraham, to give me that? Are you prepared to give me what you really love? Would you part with it in order to please me? This was a real test of Abraham's faith. It had been tested for many years now. He's waited and waited and waited. And he's waited in God, and all these long years he's been testing, and he might be inclined to think, well, I've been tested and I've waited and I've trusted. God knows me by now. God doesn't need to test me anymore. He knows me now. Well, God did. He said, the son whom thou lovest. I know what you love, Abraham. And we never, ever should get to the point where we think, God has tested me enough. God has tried me sufficiently. He knows by now where my heart is. God tested Abraham even in his advanced years, when he's given so much witness in his life to the trust he had in God. Later, when the ram is offered up, God speaks. The angel of the Lord appears and speaks to Abraham. And what has he to say? The angel of the Lord in verse 15 called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, by myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son. You haven't withheld him. You loved him. And I know you loved him. And I know your heart was on him. But now I know that thou hast not withheld him. I now know, and you know, Abraham, how your heart is attached to me. You know, if God had said to Abraham, take the best lamb out of your flock and offer it. Take a valuable beast out of the herd and offer it up. Or have even said, give me 100 lambs or 1,000. Well, Abraham would no doubt have considered the value and thought, God's asking for a lot. But I believe he would not have hesitated to do what God would ask him to do. But this is something. Take out of thy bosom. Take right out from thy heart, from thy bosom, that which you love so dearly. Would you withhold it from me, or would you give it to me? And God sometimes comes, you see, to his children, and they discover that God will test their faith in this very way. And God didn't ask Abraham to give up something that really wasn't of any great value, something that wouldn't cost him anything. God said, I want to see if you would withhold from me and deny to yourself what is as dear to you. And no doubt, I'm sure that Isaac, if you'd asked, Abraham would say, he's the dearest thing on earth to me. He means more to me than my flocks and my herds and all my wealth and my influence. Isaac means so much to me. And then God said, would you withhold him from me? And Abraham proved that he would not. And you see that Abraham, when God then sent the angel to talk to him, he recognized that God was testing his faith for a very good reason. But he was also testing his love. It's interesting, the connection between love and faith and obedience in the teachings of Paul, but in the experience of the child of God. Faith that worketh by love. They go together. And then you have Paul speaking about the obedience of faith. So love and faith and obedience, they're interconnected. They all go together. If God is testing the faith of Abraham, he's going to test his love. If he's testing the faith and love of Abraham, he's testing his obedience at the same time. And that's exactly what God does. He now not only tests the faith of Abraham, he tests his love for him. Are you prepared to give me up the object that your heart is set on? Now, God, when he told Abraham what he was to do, you see at the beginning of verse 3, Abraham rose up early in the morning. God had visited him, obviously, through the night. And Abraham responded immediately, and he rose up early. And what does he do? He goes to Mount Moriah. But you will see how the journey develops. God said he was to go to Mount Moriah to offer up, at the end of verse 2, upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. Now you go right back to the calling of Abraham. When he was called out of the Ur of the Chaldees, he's called to go out, and he went out not knowing whither he went. He just had to leave the future all in God's hands. He just had to commit his way to God and trust God. He went out not knowing whither he went. Where's God going to lead me to? Where's he going to take me to? Where is this journey going to end? Where will God have me to plant my feet? And then, what happens here? God said to Abraham to go to Mount Moriah to offer him up there on a mountain, which I will tell thee of. God didn't tell him everything at once. He didn't give him all the details. And sometimes, you see, we can become very anxious and very concerned, and we can think, well, God, if he's guiding me aright, he has to tell me everything. He has to open everything up so that I can step forward by confidence. I know what I'm doing. I know where God is taking me. I can see the path opening before me. And God said, Abraham, you start out for Moriah, Mount Moriah. And then I will tell you when you get so far in the journey, I'll tell you then which mountain you're to go to. You see how God works? Every step has to be a step of faith. Abraham, he's heading for Mount Moriah. He's wondering which of them mountains in the distance is God directing me to. And we are told that in verse 3, he rose up, he went with the wood and the burnt offering and went unto the place of which God had told him. And then what happens? On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. Step by step, stage by stage. And we must ever learn to acquiesce. Not to think we've a right. I'm not going forward. I'm not going to take a step until God clarifies everything for me. I want no mystery about things. I don't want God to be keeping light from me and information from me. God said, Abraham, you take the first step and I'll lead you to the second and then the third. And eventually you'll come to the mountain where I want you to offer up Isaac. Now, it is most interesting to see the response of Abraham. As we said, he rose early, he made the preparations, and off he and Isaac go with the young men. What does Abraham say to the young men on the third day? Verse 5, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. Now, God didn't say to Abraham, I want you to go to Mount Moriah and worship me. He didn't say, I want you and Isaac, I want you to take Isaac to worship me. He said, I want you to take Isaac and offer him up for a burnt offering. And they set off. And what does Abraham say? I and the lad will go yonder and worship. What kind of worship was Abraham's worship? He didn't say, I and the lad are going to make a sacrifice. I am going to offer up an offering to God because he's asked for it. We're going to worship. We're going to worship. This was to be costly worship. This was to be testing worship. But you see the mind of Abraham. You see the spiritual mindedness of Abraham. It was as though I'm going to adore God. I'm going to worship God. Whatever he requires of me, whatever he demands, I'm going to bow down and worship God. I will worship him reverently, even if he's taking the dearest thing out of my life, I'm still going to worship him. What a blessed attitude is that of Abraham. They went, both of them, together. There's no lamb as yet. And Isaac is inquiring, well, where's the lamb? We've got the wood, we've got the fire. Where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And God has told Abraham what's required of him, and Abraham by faith says, we will go and worship God, and we leave the rest to God. We leave the things in God's hands that have to be in his hands. We'll do our duty and leave the rest with God. And therefore, they went, both of them, together after Isaac has made the inquiry, where's the lamb? And they went both together. There's no indication whatever, not even a hint, that Isaac was beginning to question. He was beginning to doubt, what's this all about? Where is the lamb? I'm not going to any altar or to any form of worship without a lamb. They went together as though Isaac and Abraham were both in their own minds going to worship God and return together. I and the lad will worship and come again to you. And that seems to be the spirit with which Isaac went with his father. And when you see Abraham laying his son upon the altar, now you imagine that scene, binding his own son whom he loved, laying him out there in the altar, ready to take his life at God's command. Wouldn't you imagine that there would be sorrow and grief and pain involved in that action? And yet you get the picture of Isaac, no resistance. Remember, Isaac is a young stripling of a lad. His father is an old, frail man. And it would seem that Isaac was as willing to lay himself down on the altar as Abraham was willing to offer him up. And they went, both of them, together. Now God was testing the love of Abraham, but also his obedience. Every step must have been a very thoughtful step. Abraham, every step. He's getting nearer to Moriah. He's getting near to the place where he knows he's going to have to build an altar. He's going to have to lay his son upon it and offer him up. We know not what thoughts were going through his mind, but one thing we do know is the relationship he loved Isaac. God knew that. And as he gets nearer and nearer to the appointed place, you might think he'd slow down. He'll be wondering, what is this going to turn out like? But he had in Hebrews 11, Abraham was of a mind, well, if God takes him away, I'm going to trust him still. I can do nothing else. I'll just have to trust God. He gave me the promise. He gave me the son. And he told me that through Isaac, he was going to bless the nations and so on. And if God is now going to take him away, there's only one thing that I can expect. God intends to give him back some way. He will raise him up again. He will do something. Abraham had that confidence in God. Abraham didn't understand everything. That's obvious. He must have been mystified. Why did God bother to give me Isaac? Why did he keep me waiting so? And he gave me Isaac, and now he's taking him off me. He allowed me to love him for these years, and he allowed the love to develop, and now he's taken him from me. And Abraham, if he tried to work it all out and reason it all out, he would have been absolutely baffled. I don't know what God's doing. I do not understand it. Why would he do this to me? Why would he give me Isaac and then require him to be handed back? Why? You see, Abraham had to learn to live absolutely by faith and set his reasoning apart and trust God and not his own reasoning. He couldn't understand what God was doing any more than you or I, if we'd been in that situation, would have been able to figure it out. What is God doing? But this he did know. I'm going to trust God. I will go to Moriah. I will build the altar. I'll trust God. I don't know how this is going to end up, but I'm going to trust God. That's basically what God was requiring. Obedience. Because he trusted God. Now, you see the result of it all. At the end of the, or near the end of the chapter 22, God said in verse 16, by myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy Son, thine only Son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven and the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies, and thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. Now, if we were to go back to the early stages in the life of Abraham, didn't God make these promises to him? Now, was God going to keep his word, or was he not? Didn't God establish the covenant when Abraham was asleep? So surely Abraham has every reason to believe God is going to keep his promise. God is going to make Isaac a blessing. God is going to make my seed as the stars of heaven, and so on. And yet here's God saying, now I'm going to keep my promise. I'm going to fulfill it. I'm going to do what I said, because you've obeyed me. So you see how important obedience to God is. If we want God's blessing, we've got to obey God. God said, I will bless you. But now he's telling Abraham, because you've obeyed me, I'm going to bless you and bless the nations because you've obeyed my voice. We cannot walk in disobedience and expect God to fulfill his promises. You will get professing Christians, oh, this is a wonderful promise. This is a great promise. And they will say, God has given me this promise. And I'm just going to wait till God fulfills it. And he will better keep his promise, whatever I do or don't do. God said, I'm going to bless you because you've obeyed me. And that's a lesson we need to learn. The connection between faith in God and love for God and obedience to God. And Abraham, his faith, his love, his obedience is tested. But his life is an exemplary life. And it is his faith that is set before us as an example. A faith that when it was required to deny self, it did. A love for God that surpassed his love even for his own son, his only son. An obedience that was immediate. He didn't hang around waiting. I need more time with Isaac. This is a tremendous sacrifice I've been asked to make. I need more time with Isaac. Surely, surely God will not expect an immediate response. Surely he can give me time to think about it. He acted immediately. He rose early in the morning to obey God. And that's the obedience that God requires of you and me, the love that he requires, the faith that he requires. But we shall leave it there. May the Lord bless his word.